Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to a Champions League edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. I'm your host, Greg, and we are here with a studded rotational panel fitting for a midweek game where we're going to talk about an exciting period of time for Tottenham. Let's get started. A lot of our normal hosts can't be here thanks to hurricanes in the United States. They're fine, but they don't have power. So we have two of our all-star bench players. Leading us off, coming straight to us from Brooklyn, his native homeland, we have Vince. Vince, how are you doing this lovely evening?
It's been a little bit of time since I've been on my boyhood pod, but it's good to be back. It's good to play a part for the team. You know, when you called, I was ready, so good to be back.
Well, you've been working hard in training, so I wanted to reward that. So, you know, I appreciate it. Next up, coming to us all the way from sunny California, we have Ryan Rosenblatt. Ryan, welcome back to the pod.
Do you really expect me not to laugh every time you say the most dangerous podcast?
Well, that's the whole point. We're very dangerous. We're Americans talking about soccer. It's all very, very horrifying. So, but yeah, we actually have something very exciting to talk about today. Tottenham Hotspur had a big Champions League match, and we kicked some ass in it. Tottenham beat Dortmund at Wembley 3-1. It was pretty friggin' exciting. I know on earlier podcasts when we were talking about the draw, a lot of us were talking about whether or not it was worth it to play big teams or whether we wanted to have a draw that led us to be able to advance a little bit easier. But Ryan, we kind of got both of those today, and that was pretty fun. How happy were you with this performance?
I highly recommend drawing really good teams who have a lot of injured players. I think that's the formula that Spurs need to look at going forward.
I think it is a corner of the market that is yet to be exploited by English teams.
Yeah, I mean, it worked. And there's like, ooh, we don't have a lot of our good players, so we're just going to throw some dudes out there. And Harry Kane and Heung-Min Son were just like, that's fine with me. We're good. And they just, like, truck-sticked people the entire time, which was hilarious.
I know in retrospect last year probably was a more interesting Champions League group than it seemed at the time, given what Monaco went on to do. But, I mean, this really felt like a Champions League game in a way that last year didn't. Am I wrong? Or did you feel the same way?
I mean, I was more terrified, like, if that's what we consider the Champions League. I was super scared, whereas last time I had confidence, and confidence and Tottenham don't go together.
They rarely... I know I thought we were just going to get rolled, even though all these Dortmund fans were telling me about all their injuries and how it was going to affect them and how worried they were. I just figured, nope, Dortmund, like, Pulisic is going to embarrass us today. It's not going to go well.
I mean, Pulisic did... basically just destroy Toby's ankles on one play.
So, fortunately, it was just the one play, though.
I mean, he kind of did give us problems the entire time. The good thing is, like, the rest of the team was not good.
Vince, I mean, the way Spurs played today was a little different than we usually see. We sort of sat back and let the game come to us. Were you surprised to see Pochettino break out such a big change in a match like this?
I mean... yeah, we don't play like that ever, and it usually we have a lot of problems against teams like Dortmund, who is just going to press the shit out of the midfield. But he decided that he was just going to pass over it. Not all the time, but we did it enough where we were able to like cut them open on the counter in like ways that we usually just don't play. So I was super surprised, but I was really happy to see it. I mean, I don't know how else to talk about it. I mean, how many times have you seen us play like that?
The only time I can think of is that first year, Pochettino's first year here, where we sort of really hunkered in against Arsenal. But that was more of a defensive, that was sort of a last stand for 90 minutes.
Last season Tottenham did it against City.
The first match or the second?
The second one. They did it against City, and they played deeper, and it went... I mean, it didn't feel... It felt like Tottenham played deeper today, I think, especially in the first half, because the press just killed Spurs, and they couldn't get the ball out of their own half, leading to the BVB goal. But it was kind of the same idea. The only difference is City last season is a better team than the Dortmund team we played today. So City probably could have scored a couple more last season. This was definitely the best I think we've played this way under Pochettino, even if it left me very, very scared for most of the first half.
The first half was like terrifying because A, I'm not used to them playing like that. So seeing it is like there's cognitive dissonance, like, oh, we're in trouble. Why are we playing like this? But then, I think we created enough chances, in the second half where I started realizing, like, and not just chances where we're finishing it, like obviously the first two goals we scored were amazing finishes, but where we were actually like cutting them apart with regularity, where there seemed to be some kind of method to the madness. Because the first half, I agree, I was just like really, I was really happy to be up 2-1, but I was also like really worried. Is like, is this sustainable? Are we going to be able to like prevent enough chances to keep this lead?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way they played, like, the thing I was saying is, like, it made perfect theoretical sense against a team like Dortmund because it kind of takes away their opportunity to counter, so it neutralizes the best way that they attack, and it puts numbers behind the ball, it takes space away. Theoretically, it should make it easier to break their press and be able to get through there. So, like, it makes total sense theoretically. I just doubted that we could actually execute it for 90 minutes because we've never seen a Pochettino team execute it for 90 minutes, but for the most part, they did. And so good on them. In retrospect, you think about it, you're like, oh, you're going to spend a lot of time in and around your own box. That's not a great idea. But when you have Toby Alderweireld and Jan Vertonghen, that's actually not the worst idea.
But at the same time, you guys are both right. We've never seen us play this way before, except for maybe that City match last year. But sort of every year under Pochettino, we've seen at least one major tactical shift at a various point in time. Now, I think those shifts, going to the back three last year, the sort of focusing the team around Dembele the year before that, it's been much more instructive about how we're going to play going forward. But, I mean, him being at least slightly flexible in terms of how he plays the team, we've seen some of this, and I'm very curious to see if we're going to employ it against pressing teams in the Premier League from here on out, because we have not, generally speaking, played well against the press. I mean, I know Liverpool has absolutely eaten our lunch under Klopp once or twice, and it would be nice to see us try something like this as opposed to go at them and get carved up like so many other attacking teams do.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing you could say about Poch, though, is while at least up until about halfway through last year, he kind of was married to the 4-2-3-1 for the most part. This is a dude who did play with two strikers at Southampton at the beginning of last season when we signed Janssen. We thought maybe he'd be good. He tried playing with two strikers, and he did go three at the back and is still going three at the back. So he could be he is a stubborn motherfucker, but he does show – he does show that, like, he wants to have options at the very least. And so seeing this and be like, okay, that's another option to put in his pocket, I think it's something we're going to see again. I'm just not sure how often.
I know that I've talked to Michael, and I know that Michael's mentioned things about this when we speak about it too. He talks about, like, there's management styles where some managers are optimists, some are problem solvers. And I'll even take it, like, a step further, like, where some are, like, tinkerers. Like, they're always trying to, like, manage every little situation that comes along. And Michael puts Poch pretty much in the optimist range, where he thinks, like, his coaching ability and his way and his philosophy is eventually going to win out. But I think there is enough evidence now that we see that, like, he'll definitely adjust if he has to. He'll make purchases if he has to. He's not blind. He's stubborn as fuck. Like, he wants it to work his way, but I mean, this is the fourth year, and we've seen kind of like a new trick. I think you alluded to it every single year, to the point where we can't really complain about it anymore. I think Ben you know, podcast regular sidekick Ben. I think he gets mad
because sidekick Ben.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's gonna make him really happy that I got shouted out in that way. But I think he gets mad because Poch doesn't tinker enough for his liking. He doesn't change as fast as he wants to. But I think like Poch is one of those guys where he has to like see it happen over and over and over again before he's gonna make that kind of change to his system.
And it's surprising because Ben is so patient.
And I mean, forgiving.
It was just funny watching the match today and thinking back to last time we played Dortmund, though, and you're just like, right, Ryan Mason is not out there. Nasser Chadli, not out there. Josh Onuman, not out there.
Tom Carroll, not out there.
Ryan Mason, Tom Carroll in the center of the midfield. I'm shocked that one didn't work.
Well, that was, correct me if I'm wrong, that's when we were chasing Leicester, right? Like, we clearly punted on those fixtures because we were trying to catch Leicester in the league because all of a sudden it was a title race. It was still...
Yeah, that was like March of that season. But it was one of those weird things where Pochettino played the first team all through the Europa League until the round of 16 against Dortmund. And, like, I get we were chasing Leicester at that point, but in what season does the league race not get really, really tight in March, April, May? Like, as if we didn't know that was going to happen.
I don't think we knew still it was going to happen with us. That's what I think it was. I think as soon as the reality came, like, this is a two-horse race, I think that's what... I remember it tightening and Arsenal fell off, and maybe City was the other team that really fell off that year, but all of a sudden it was like us and Leicester.
Right, but even like if things play out the way you expect and we were battling with one of those teams for fourth place, you're still in the same situation where like the league means everything. And it was as if we played the whole Europa League season as if, like, no, the Europa League matters just as much. And then we were, like, surprised that the league mattered a lot in March when, one way or another, we were going to be in that kind of situation come March. And it was just funny watching that. You're like, wait, now is when we're going to give it up?
I think that was really, like, a life comes at you fast moment where it's like, oh, it's March. Eric Dier's played 40 matches. This shit is untenable.
Eric Dier cannot play another match without a rest.
That was the year when we were like trying to like hope that he would get his yellow card suspension at the right time. Yep. So that way he could get a match off, but also not the wrong match off.
And clear his books for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So we've got 3 points against Dortmund. I think if we were going to progress out of the Champions League, our Champions League group, we pretty much had to win this game. Vince, does what happened today sort of change your expectations of what we're going to be able to do in this group moving forward?
No, not at all. I mean, like, we could lose twice to, like, Madrid and lose in Germany and fucking lose in Cyprus. Like,
losing to Apoel at home, I think, is the true, like, Tottenham Hotspur blows their own foot off fixture here.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the day. Like, I'm just taking this as it comes. Like, last year, same as Ryan, I was, like, super confident. I was, like, planning out, like, how this shit was going to unfold in February when we were in the group stages, and it was just a mess. So this year was, like, we have a real group. It's a fun group. I'm just going to enjoy each match as it comes. Like, I'm not setting myself up for that shit right now. I'm enjoying today.
All I know is after the match went final today, I texted my Real Madrid fan and friend, we're coming for you, motherfucker, and I'm just going to live in that headspace forever.
It's going to happen, because what could possibly go wrong when Spurs play Real Madrid with a tall, blonde striker? Like, what could go wrong?
It's okay. But here's the thing, is like now that Jan got his red card and there's no Jan or Dele in the next match, like, the problem is now there's a reason to lose to Apoel. Like, it's not a good reason, but Tottenham don't need a good reason. They just need a reason.
God, we better not fucking lose to Apoel. I swear to God.
Lose to Apoel, beat Madrid.
Yeah, that would be that would be a fucking Champions League group to talk about for years to come. Some of the individual performances today, I guess the guy I want to talk about in particular, I guess there's two, and both defenders, oddly enough. Let's talk a little about Davinson Sanchez. He played against Everton on the weekend, but I think this is certainly the most high-profile match he's had. I was really impressed. He got, you know, still looks young, still looks new to this stage, but at the same time, like, I mean, he was keeping up with Aubameyang in a foot race, which was, I mean, pretty damn impressive. Ryan, were you, did what did you think of Sanchez's performance today?
I think it was like on the upper end of what we could realistically expect from him. Mm-hmm. This is a dude who just like a year ago was playing his first matches in Europe. So, like, let's be realistic about what to expect from him. I think between the Everton match and today, we saw this is a guy who can definitely step in and play when needed. He's also going to make mistakes. He had that giveaway that probably should have led to a Dortmund goal. He made a couple other bad passes. He's really, really, really good defending 1v1, though. And like you said, he's a physical monster. I've also been really impressed with the way that he reads angles and passing lanes. And he steps into to passing lanes that theoretically should not be there. He takes them away really quickly. So that way it kind of just makes a midfielder who's looking to advance the ball stop, turn around, play a square ball, and reset the opposing team's entire attack. He's much better at that than a 21-year-old should be. So I like him a lot. Playing next to Vertonghen and Alderweireld makes you look a lot better than you are, too, and mm-hmm. that's super helpful.
I mean, but I think clearly the plan is certainly by the end of the season, if not right away, because I think we might see it right away. I mean, the plan is to have this guy be our third center back, right?
I mean, I don't think there's any doubt he is right now.
Yeah, yeah. It's. I don't know. It's an impressive start between this and the Everton game. I'm very, you know, obviously taking, you know, everything in context, but it's been an impressive start for him. Next up, the other guy I want to discuss is Ben Davies, who, according to some Spurs fans, is better than Danny Rose, right, Vince?
Yes. I'm just going to say, no, he's not better than Danny Rose. I mean, he's had a really nice stretch, and, like, there's nothing wrong with that. But there's no reason to get, like, every time, like, a player has a good stretch, they don't have to automatically, like, be better than the player that they're playing in place of. Like, that doesn't have to be a thing. That doesn't have to be a prerequisite for being happy with how a player is playing.
But he's playing well right now.
Yeah.
Can we just talk about how this great run of form for Ben Davies coincides with his becoming best friends with Sonny? And I don't think that's a coincidence.
It's Pochettino thought Son needed a not-fat friend. So they got rid of Kevin Vibber and replaced him with Ben Davies. I think you're right.
I think it's the other way around. I think that Pochettino realized that Ben Davies needed a new bright shining light in his life, and he gave him Sonny, and that has changed everything.
I like the way you think. Like he's from Wales. He's so used to everything being cloudy and miserable. He needed that change to take his game to another level. It's a good theory. I like it.
And how can Sonny not make you happy just as a human being?
I gotta say, like, watching him celebrate scoring that, like, crazy goal in the Champions League, like, boy, that felt right. Like, that made me feel real good watching that clip. Like, watching him in a Spurs jersey celebrating that goal in a Champions League match against Dortmund, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is what being a football fan should feel like. This is nice. This is real nice.
And then Ben Davies saw that and was like, you know what? I need to play the best football of my life now. And he did.
We'll see how long he can keep it up. But for the time being, it's nice to have, especially since, like, I don't know, Danny Rose is in, you know, the dungeon beneath Hotspur Way, apparently.
I mean, while people are making stupid, like, comments about Davies being as good as Rose, can we just point out, as good as Davies has been, when Rose got hurt, he was the best fullback in England. Like, let's just state that as a fact. He was the best fullback in England when he got hurt last year.
No, Spurs had both of the best fullbacks in England last year, so.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, I mean, Ben Davies is good, but he's not the best fullback in England. Danny Rose was.
Well,
he's still really slow.
Yeah, and that's the thing about Davies. Like, he is very good technically on the ball. It's great having him when we're attacking in the final third, but the way, particularly with the way Spurs play, it's just, God, when he gets caught in transition, and it's, you know, there's only so much a guy with his foot speed can do about that. I mean, but, it's just awful to watch sometimes because, you know, he just can't get back. I don't even think his defensive instincts are the worst. But, you know, the problem is,
I think his defensive instincts are fine. The problem is he starts running on time. He just takes a long time to get there.
Yeah, and your defensive instincts aren't as good when you've just been, you know, getting on your horse down the field and you have to throw, you've got like a split second to make a decision. So, although Danny Rose is very good at that. So,
and And just to bring it back to that point, there's a literal word for like when you run someplace and it takes you a long time to get there. It's called slow. He's just slow.
is that from the original Greek? Is that what that is?
Yeah, that's the etymology of the word.
I'm not sure if Danny Rose is even running again, but I would still take him in a race against Ben Davies.
He is so fast. I don't know. That's I guess let's talk about the other performance today. We got our first look at Serge Aurier in a Spurs jersey today, and we'll talk about the off the field stuff probably a little later if tonight. But I don't know. Like it was kind of it really felt like he sort of played his way into the match. Ryan, I don't know what your opinions are, but I mean, he certainly was by the 90th minute, he was starting to look for a like-for-like replacement with Walker. I mean, some of the moves he was pulling on those Dortmund guys, I was getting very impressed by the end of that match.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like a guy who hasn't played a match in like 3 months.
Especially with
his team. He literally hasn't played a match, period, in 3 months for anyone. And it looked like it. So, I mean, I think he's going to be a good player for this team. He got a lot better as the match went on. Like, physically, he clearly has what it takes to be the superhuman player that Poch kind of requires of his fullbacks. And I think that Davies was better because he had a right back who can run. So he didn't have to be as aggressive getting forward. So I think that helped him a lot. And he kind of... But, I mean, Aurier's touch was problematic. He didn't know where runners were coming from. He read the game pretty poorly. He was a step slow to step up and try and cut out stuff, a step slow to press. So he definitely wasn't good. The bright side is that he got better, and I think a lot of it comes down to he hasn't played a match in 3 months, and it's the first time he's ever played in this system. So he'll probably be a good right back in 3 weeks.
I mean, Vince, it's not going to take long for him to sort of supplant Trippier as our primary. I think we're going to go through the motions of they're going to be splitting time as rotation demands, but I mean, he's going to be our primary guy within 2 months.
Seeing as he's just already better than him, it's not going to take long at all. No. I mean, I agree with that, all that stuff. I mean, people make it seem like, hey, well, you know, he's this top level right back, he should just step in. And it's like, Poch's system isn't that kind of freewheeling. This isn't like Rafael van der Vaart walking into the kind of like chaos of like Harry saying go play number 10 like the way a number 10 plays and just figuring it out as he went. There's a lot of stuff to kind of account for here, and he looked all the things Ryan said. He looked a step slow, he looked a little unsure of himself. You know, Dortmund's overloading the wings, I mean, and they have the majority of possession. Fullbacks aren't going to look super great in those situations. But, I mean, he's fine. He'll be good.
It's also worth pointing out that accepting international breaks, between now and the end of the year, Spurs pretty much play 2 matches every single week. So Trippier and Aurier are going to play pretty much once a week because Poch likes to rotate his fullbacks and not have them play 180 in the same week. So we're going to see a lot of both of them, and regardless of how either one of them plays. But Aurier will be a lot better than Trippier because he's not bad at soccer.
Ryan, do you think we're going to see Kyle Walker-Peters play some left back, at least until Rose is able to run again, because of that heavy schedule?
I've seen no indication that that's in the cards, but it seems like a thing that at least in theory would make sense. But I mean, we've heard nothing of Kyle Walker-Peters working at left back at all, so I don't know.
I just can't believe we're going to play. I mean, I don't know who our backup. If he went down with injury, if Davies went down with injury, it would be Vertonghen as a starter. But
yeah,
you know, I don't know who our backup left back is right now. And you know, considering Burnley. Who the hell are we playing?
Barnsley.
Okay, we're playing some team that starts with a B on Tuesday in the League Cup. And, like, I mean, I don't know who the hell's going to start left back. I don't think we're going to play Vertonghen there.
Kyle Walker-Peters played the first half against Roma at left back.
That's what I was I was basing it off of, which who the hell knows. So
that's what you get for watching preseason.
Hey, man, you got to do what you got to do. So. Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. Let's talk about another really good game the Spurs played recently. We played Everton on the weekend, and after two sort of shaky starts in the league, or three, I guess, shaky games in the league, Spurs looked real confident against an Everton team that lots of fans of narrative were already proclaiming, you know, vastly improved. And we made Everton look real normal, right, Vince?
Yeah, that was kind of almost like one of those matches where we just completely walk a team off the pitch and just kind of bully them, and they never really get in a game. I think there was a couple times where they maybe created chances, but most of it was at the end of the game. And even though I think we scored our first goal on a stupid cross that Harry scored, like, not stupid, it was pretty funny, actually.
He did it on purpose. I don't care what he says.
We're not doing this again.
I'm real petty, and I still remember last year's opener where Ross Barkley scored on a cross, on a free kick where he was crossing it. So I thought it was good retribution. But we had created a lot of chances up to that point, and then after that goal, like, it was kind of floodgates open, and the match was over within the next, like, it was right after halftime, where we put the game. It was 3-0. So I think this was almost like, you know, the way we usually just pound Watford into the ground, it was almost that bad.
I mean, I was really impressed because, like, I thought if nothing else, this would be sort of a turgid defensive display, just given the way Everton sort of constructed. And we really just opened them up without a whole lot of trouble at all.
Dude, Everton are slow.
They're so slow.
They are like, Martina is a center back playing right back. Baines is 48 years old. Like, Klaassen, Rooney, and Siggy are, like, that's who's supposed to theoretically run at you. Like, that team is slow.
And Sandro.
Yeah, like, I mean, I knew they were slow, but, what, like, Ben Davies looked fast.
Trippier looked fine. It was crazy.
It was Like, literally, every time, like, we're just like, we're going to run, and they're just like, we don't really do that, do we? No, we're good. And that was the match. Like, just one team ran, and the other team couldn't.
And the match, for me, really crystallized, like, they spent £50 million on Sigurdsson. Like, what? Like, I like Sigurdsson as a player, but A, I don't think he's good enough for Everton. And B, certainly not for anything approaching that level of money. And you look at a game like this where I know it's his first, like, home match with them. He hasn't been with the team that long, but he was a total passenger in this match. And I don't want to pick on Siggy too much, but it was just, I mean, this sort of, that crystallized, like, a lot of Everton's problems to me. It's like they just went and got a bunch of players who I don't think are, generally speaking, good enough. I mean, Pickford sort of, but even he didn't have a great game against us. So, I don't know.
Like, regardless of what you pay and kind of what you're going to do, you only get one of Siggy, Rooney, and Klaassen. Like, you can't play more than one of them at a time, and they decide to sign all three in one summer.
Yep. And they're going to run them all out there at once, and I don't know what you're thinking with that. Like, the way Spurs play, I mean, the way Spurs or a City or whoever, maybe even an Arsenal play, like, they couldn't abide any of those players in their midfield. Like, Arsenal could, but, you know, the rest of us, like, you know, they wouldn't take anyone that slow in their midfield, and it's just...
No, like, maybe you could have one of them come off the bench. That's it.
It boggles my mind, and, like, Sigurdsson's nice and all, but the only thing he does that's really significantly above average is his free kicks, and other than that, he's, like, kind of a nice passer, kind of a decent midfielder who can't run and doesn't do defensive work. It's because he can't run, and it's just, oof, man.
I think it's mainly they wanted the feel good story of bringing Rooney back, and then after that, they're like, ooh, we can't sign anyone who's going to run so fast that he's behind the play, and this is what you get.
I would love to think they did that just so they could make Wayne Rooney look good. That is highly. I would love to think that is their transfer strategy.
If you're paying him 300,000 quid a week, like, you kind of got to build around him in some form.
Oh.
I don't think that was actually their transfer strategy, but I think that some perverse, twisted part of that, of, I guess we got to make Rooney work, plays into that to some degree.
It's completely insane. It's completely insane. But it was nice to see Spurs really turn the screws to somebody who is not a terrible opponent, and
it was away.
Yeah,
do we know they're not terrible?
Do we know that they're terrible or not terrible?
No, do we know that? Because you said they're not terrible. I'm like, do we know they're not terrible?
Like, that's a, I mean, they're seventh, probably.
Here's the thing. You could sit here and say, do we know they're not terrible? But I would still bet big money on Arsenal finishing closer to Everton than they do fifth.
What a time to be alive. What a time to be alive.
Is this the part when we preview Arsenal Cologne in the Europa League?
Yeah, what do you want to... like? I want to just focus on this for a second. Tottenham just rocked Dortmund in the Champions League, and Arsenal get to play Cologne in the Europa League. And it's just fucking amazing. Like, think about how many years we dreamed about this happening. Like, it's finally a reality.
It's the Podolski Derby. That's the best way you could, like, sell this match.
Is it? We should workshop this. The Pull Derby?
Yeah, I don't want to workshop this.
Oh, you people. You're no fun at all. Yeah, God, that's going to be a terrible fucking match, isn't it?
I mean, it's definitely not going to be good.
It's going to be, like, the least satisfying 3-0 Arsenal win for an Arsenal fan, like, you can imagine. I guess the question is, like, will Sanchez, like, actually sit on the ground, like, on the pitch, instead of actually playing?
I mean, I think probably the biggest question is that when they play again next time in the return leg, does troops go to Cologne?
I hope so. I think the real question, I think you've overlooked, like, the mariachi band that's going to be following Lacazette around playing Hello Darkness, My Old Friend, like, are they going to be interfering with the match? Because I feel like he's going to be halfway through the match realize that he has made a huge mistake and question what he has gotten himself into. But, oh, man. I think I might try to watch that tomorrow just to enjoy it, just fully immerse myself in the Schadenfreude. Like,
Lacazette is cashing 200,000 quid a week. I think he's fine.
Yeah, but the old gray mare ain't what she used to be.
I would lose so many matches for 200,000 quid a week.
Well, you go to Juve to do that, so. Vince, what were you about to say?
I was just going to basically say, not that I really love talking about Arsenal, but the way that, like, Wenger's basically just ignored every problem going on with the club right now, I would just love it so much if he just did not travel and acted like the Europa League wasn't happening, like, wouldn't take questions on it, like, just sent, like, his youth team and just completely acted like it wasn't a thing. Like, that would make me happy, and I'd have a lot more respect for him if he did that.
No, I think it's the other way around. What month do you think that Arsenal stopped trying in the league because they have to focus on the Europa League to qualify for next year's Champions League?
November.
That's also very good.
How long is it before they're just like, you know what, the Europa League is our way in?
You know what, though? It's going to be really fucking annoying when they win it and get in. And, like, we could never get past the quarterfinals. Like, that is going to chat my fucking ass when it happens.
I'm excited for, like, will Alexis play in the semifinals? Because is he going to Juve or is he going to Bayern? Will he even play in the Europa League?
God, can you imagine if they just let Sanchez and then maybe Ozil next year go? Like, if they just don't re-sign them or sell them. How incredible that... Oh, man. What a time to be alive, guys. This is just what a time to be alive. So, one thing we should talk about that we have not addressed yet on this podcast is the transfer window. We've talked a lot about it leading up to it, but now it's actually happened. So we have a lot of concrete things to talk about that have not been able to be discussed in such terms before. And we have two podcasters who have not talked about our transfers yet. So we have a little bit to discuss before we wrap this bad boy up. Let's start with something that is entirely new, because this wasn't even considered until the day transfer deadline day, which makes me so happy. Tottenham Hotspur signed Fernando Llorente to be our backup striker. It is just fucking incredible. This is like the first big transfer I ever wanted to see happen at Tottenham. Way back in the day, I loved Fernando Llorente from afar. He was always like the first guy I bought in FIFA when I started my career mode with Spurs. It's fucking, I know he's not nearly what he used to be. We probably can't play him for a full match. He probably can't press for more than 10 minutes. I don't give a shit. Fernando Llorente is a member of Tottenham Hotspur, and I'm very, very happy about it. Vince, do you have any feelings about Llorente, or are you totally neutral on this.
I have some feelings about the way you're pronouncing his last name, but I'm going to ignore that right now. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm gonna miss my curvy ex striker as he goes and gets some game time down.
You're gonna miss Thick Finn.
Yeah, I'm gonna miss him. But you know, I don't know. Like Llorente scored 15 goals last year. I mean, I don't know, man. Like it's fine. It was an $8 million punt on getting a striker that kind of everybody respects. And I know I've never been in a professional locker room, but like guys talk about when you bring in like seasoned pros into a locker room and things like that, how sometimes that kind of picks up everybody's head and like they're like, look at Llorente coming through the door and they think like, okay, we're making signings of like big time players, even if he's 32. So
I know, I mean, Hugo was like apparently drooling and texting Poach about it when we signed him. So
yeah, I mean, he's handsome.
He's really handsome.
So handsome.
He's really handsome. He's a handsome boy. He's a number one handsy boy.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know that Hugo was like really excited about it, but like that probably changes once he realizes that his spot as the most handsome player on the team is now under threat.
I mean, Hugo's only had the one hairstyle. Like Llorente's rocked like three or four. It's kind of incredible.
Hugo's definitely had more than one. Look at the pictures when he first came over.
Different points. Like it's not that different.
That's disrespectful.
Llorente's like
Hugo.
Changing shape and hair color, and it's just, you know, he's an artiste.
None of that matters. His eyes are what really does it.
You're not wrong. It really brings the room together.
Guys, he's so handsome.
He is the number one handsy boy on Tottenham Hotspur. If you want to make a rational argument for Llorente, I think that it is he offers a different look, which, I mean, Jansen didn't really offer any look, but
that look is handsome.
That look is handsome, but he also can, like, head the shit out of a football. So, like, you know.
I mean, I think it's twofold. One, if you have to bring someone on late in a match, like, he can score goals. He's not really good at a lot of other things anymore, but he scores goals. And also, I mean, like I said earlier, Pochettino has in the past liked to play with two strikers. I think having Llorente actually gives us that opportunity now. He could play Kane and Llorente together, which, hey, I'll take another new option. And most, I don't know if it's most important, but it's up there, is that after he scores goals, you can play Abba.
Yeah, you're right. No, that's up there. I think that's really important. I think that's extremely important. You can watch the number one handsy boy while listening to ABBA. I don't know what else you want to get out of watching soccer, but.
And you do it after he scores a goal, which, like, he's actually going to do, and Thick Vin could not.
No. I do love my curvy striker, but he did not score goals. How are we feeling about the loss of Thick Vin? Finn Vin, how are you feeling about this?
Personally or like football wise?
No, but as a man who loves his curvy striker, how are you feeling?
Not good. I would take all the taunts and all the kind of ridicule from my friends who didn't understand my like peculiar taste in strikers and my, you know, I could take all that if he would just come back. You saw the pictures of him when he was sitting there taking his medical, like having blood drawn. It wasn't good, man. I'm not good.
I mean, either way, we're better at striker than we were before. I'll take it.
I mean, only if you're adhering to society's, you know, stereotypes and, like, you know, the paradigm of a striker that, you know,
the patriarchy like, is
that the patriarchy is forced upon you. Exactly. You know, so just because you're part of the system, Ryan, doesn't mean that, you know, this is an improvement. But, yeah, we definitely got more handsome, and we probably got better at football, even though it would have been nice if, you know, our curvy striker, Thick Vin, you know, did Thick Vin things. But rest assured, dear listeners, even though he's playing in Turkey, not only will we continue to give you updates on our favorite curvy striker, we will probably still beat this meme into the ground, like, for an entire season, whether you like
it. Well, he's on loan. He's still a Spurs player.
You're right. He's still our curvy striker. No matter what Daniel Levy says, he's still our Kirby striker.
And we'll never coming striker. Back on this podcast.
Brian, you know that's a lie.
I'll probably never be asked that. So we're all...
I love my Kirby podcast host. Come on, guys. So I guess the other big transfer that let's leave him for last. Let's talk about Davinson Sanchez, just because you guys haven't talked about him, and now we've seen him in some matches. We talked about him a little bit earlier, but I mean, Ryan, I mean, you know, this guy's played 1 year in South America, 1 year in the Netherlands, and now he's at Spurs. I mean, are you comfortable with him being a starter for us this year? Are you happy with the fee we paid? I mean, it seems like the going rate these days for a promising young guy, at least for an English team. But, I mean, how do you feel about this transfer?
So what I've seen from him so far, he can at least be our third center back this year, which is fine. He fills the role we need. We don't need a one or a two. Our one and two are really good already. Long term, I think you see his potential in that he can be a super dominant player. So if he ends up being as good as we think he can be, $40 million is a bargain, even without this market. If you get a guy who can be a play center back for you for a decade, you take that, you run. $40 million is nothing. I think kind of the thing that surprised me to a degree is he's been more ready to play at this level than I thought he would be. Like you said, he played 1 year in Europe before this. But then you think about it and you realize that he got dropped when he was at Atletico Nacional. He got dropped kind of into the first team and helped them win Copa Libertadores. Then he moves to Ajax, where he theoretically wasn't supposed to be ready at 20 years old. And he plays really, really well there and helps them to the Europa League final. And then he gets called up by Colombia, where, hey, he's not really ready yet. He's a nice depth option. And when he's played for them, he's played well. So this is kind of a guy who logic tells you he's not ready yet. And they keep telling us he's not ready yet. And everywhere he goes, he's like, I can hang. I can do this. So maybe we kind of just have to stop doubting him. And maybe he is ready to go. Because, yeah, being 21 years old in the Premier League after only a year in Europe, after only a year playing consistently for the first team for Atletico Nacional, he has no business being ready to play at this level. But he had no business being ready to play at any level he played at, and he was. So I've kind of just accepted the fact that maybe this dude is just on another level.
Hopefully. It would be very exciting. I think that is like you said earlier about his performances, that's sort of the upper end of what's possible, but it's certainly possible. Let's move on to the final big acquisition Spurs made, which is obviously the one with the most baggage attached, is Serge Aurier. We've talked a lot about him on this podcast. You guys have not, obviously. Vince, I mean, what are your thoughts on him joining Spurs?
Footballing-wise, it was a move that had to be made. Like, even if everything is in disarray in the scouting department, like, it didn't take any of that to know we needed a right back. So footballing wise, it's fine. On the social aspect, like inclusiveness and every issue or every thing that's been talked about, like ad nauseum, which maybe isn't even the right word because it's like, because it should be talked about. I guess it's just one of those things where I want to see how this plays out long term before like really weighing in on it. Because, I mean, he just got here. You can't really make any kind of relationship or connection with fans that quick. That would be inauthentic. I would just like to see some kind of follow through. I feel like in his, like, welcome tweets and all that kind of stuff, it seemed like he was choosing language that was very aware of, like, some of the issues that fans had. It's never nice to see the lines drawn in any part of society down kind of like, you know, when bigotry like draws these lines and certain people fall on a side where they're kind of like accepting of bigotry and certain people are like push against that. And then, you know, it's never nice to see that. But at the same time, I think it's been talked about eloquently on Cartilage Free Captain, you know, by, LGBTQ Spurs and, you know, the list goes on and on, and like I'm choosing my words carefully here, because I don't want to say something flippant. I don't want to say something inexact that I don't believe. I just really think that this is something that I'll probably want to revisit and think about in six more months after he's been around a while. You know, are we just going to wait and kind of like hope it all goes away because he plays really well? Or is there going to be like authentic engagement on some of these issues from him and the club? So I don't know. That's the best I got.
Ryan, do you have any, do you have any additional thoughts on the RAA signing, either on or off the pitch?
I generally agree. And when you look at kind of his skills and his attributes, he's a really good fit for Pochettino's system. I think that from a pure playing perspective, he'll probably be a good signing. What his past is and what he's done, to just be blunt, is completely unacceptable. And the club and he have acknowledged it, at least maybe not as explicitly as you would like, but to some degree, which is encouraging. He also hasn't, and the club have not done enough to kind of assuage concerns and make you feel like, oh, they're going to be very proactive. They acknowledge the issue here. It's still up in the air. And you hope that he and the club take measurable steps to show that this is something that they're going to address and they acknowledge what has happened in the past. And I think that for Tottenham, that's especially important because this is a club that historically, this is a club that has a Jewish fan base. They have owned the title or word or label Yid proudly. And I mean, myself being Jewish, it's something I'm sensitive to. I think the club has generally done a good job with that, but it's not limited to that. If that is who you are going to be and that's part of what your identity is going to be, then inclusiveness and acceptiveness and the zero tolerance, or not even zero tolerance, but complete mindfulness towards bigotry extends all the way across. And it's not just about Jews. It's not just about minorities. It's not just about gay people. It is all the way across. And to this point, the club has not done enough, but they have done enough to show that maybe they will do enough going forward. So we'll see where they go from here. It's very much up in the air for me.
Yeah, I mean, we saw some initial good steps in terms of in his initial statement. You could tell the club was trying to address that in some way. I'm a little worried they're going to hope that's enough and just try and let sleeping dogs lie. But, you know, he's been actually with the team for less than a week. I want to give them a chance to actually do something with this, and it's not completely infeasible or unfeasible that he just hasn't had a chance to deal with it yet. I don't know. I'm a little disappointed we haven't gotten more yet, but certainly it's still early days. Hopefully, like you said, Vince, that in a few months when we revisit this, they'll have done something to, you know, sort of more fully address this. But we've talked about that a lot, so I will move on. Because there were a couple other moves we didn't cover here, but Ryan, how'd you feel about the transfer window as a whole? Mediocre, acceptable, unacceptable? What do you think?
I think there are two ways to kind of look at it. One is the process of it, which was awful. There were not enough targets. They were on them too late. They didn't move early enough. They didn't show that they had a especially clear plan and they knew exactly what they wanted to do. The way they tried to kind of put it all together at the end was it just didn't work. And you saw the fact they were linked to attacking midfielders repeatedly and then were unable to sign one showed that they didn't do all the business they wanted. And a lot of that comes down to a bad process, not scouting properly, not knowing exactly what you want to do from the beginning, not moving quickly. So the process and how they got to their endpoint, extremely concerning, especially going forward. That said, in terms of the final results, they did okay. Aurier, we'll just stick to the actual soccer part here, is a really good signing at right back. Llorente makes the team better at striker, even letting go of Janssen. You bring in a guy like Foyth, who long-term could develop into something. We'll see how that goes. The only miss was not getting an attacking midfielder. I think that's a thing that the team is really going to miss this season. The team just absolutely needs more depth. And without signing an attacking midfielder, it pretty much comes down to hope Eric Lamella gets fit, which maybe he will. I would really like that, but that's not exactly how I want to go into the season. So if you're grading them from a pure results standpoint, I'll give them a C+, B-, from a process standpoint, a D.
Vince, I mean, how are you feeling about the team now that the transfer window is finished?
And I guess I would just add to that. I would say that Sanchez coming in at least provides us some kind of midfield depth, because having like another true third center back can push Dyer into the midfield, which actually we need right now because Victor Wanyama's hurt, and we've been able to like at least pick up there. So I think it's been a good window for depth in every place but the attacking midfield, like Ryan said. I guess I'm not adding a lot more to it, but I would say like basically I was livid with the right back situation. I don't feel like I've ever been angry at a transfer window. And I was angry at this transfer window because there was no reason for the right back situation to forget all the other transfer kind of like garbage that went on, and we didn't have targets like ready and we didn't know exactly what we're doing. Like right back, there was no excuse for it. We sold Kyle Walker very early. We knew we only had one. Like I was pissed. So I don't know how to like rectify that into a grade, but I think Sanchez being as ready as he is has like kind of changed my mind on it. So I'd probably be somewhere like in a C plus range. If I felt better about like the social aspects of Aurier, I'd probably say a B minus, I guess. But it's probably in that C plus range.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look around the league, though, and the teams that have generally done good business the last couple of years, I mean, business aside, whether they got their money's worth, whatever, it's hard to know what is worth anything anymore. But the teams who made their teams better, and you look at Manchester United, Liverpool the last couple of years, Manchester City, they all made their signings early. They knew exactly who they wanted when the summer opened, and they got their guys. Tottenham didn't do that. We had no idea what we were doing in June and July. And I understand the new stadium and all that kind of stuff does create a little bit of uncertainty, but I think that's what it comes down to, is we're not getting the first choice guys. We're not getting the guys that we want. And part of that is also, hey, we're not going to compete financially with those clubs. So we have to see which players those clubs pass on before you go to sign someone. But that's also where your scouting comes into play, and you don't have to necessarily target the same players that United or Liverpool or Manchester City target. You can target lower profile players who you think are going to be really good if you have adequate scouting. We don't have adequate scouting, and that's, I think, why you see us spending the last month running around trying to sign team players when all the evidence over the last couple of years with all the money in the Premier League shows that if you want to do a good job in the transfer window, you have to move early.
Yeah, it's one thing if, okay, we got to wait to see, let the market sort of settle a little bit, but it's frustrating, like you said, Ryan, that we're not, it didn't feel like we had any sort of plan or we weren't snapping into action. I mean, you know, Sanchez comes out of nowhere. I mean, I guess Barkley was the only thing that was going on all window, and we were clearly unwilling to pay whatever they wanted for him. So it's just, I don't know. Yeah, more of a plan would be a welcome change next year, and hopefully we'll see it. And on that note, I think it is time to wrap it up. Ryan, where can people find you on the internet, and why is it tumblr.com/BrettRainbow? Okay, that is one of the better no-sells we've had on this podcast. Vince?
You can find me on Instagram at BrettRainbow and on Twitter at BrettRainbow. Talking about basically why I've come back to Twitter. So
good to know. Well, we've lost Ryan, but that's not important because we're about to wrap this podcast up. So for Vids, for Ryan, I am Greg, and come on, you Spurs.